glass, I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
And you are listening to WZOLPFM 103.9 live in Knoxville, that is. This is Free Thought Radio Hour, and I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and we have on the phone with us Wombat.
Wombat!
Hello and welcome back, Wombat. Glad to have you on the phone.
Always good to be back.
Yeah. This is an atheism call-in show, and we'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and science. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are a lot of atheist songs, and you'll hear some of them right here on this program and generally on this station. They are in rotation. We'll also be talking about atheists and rationalist groups that reside right here in Knoxville and how you can connect with them. And did you know that there's also an atheist television show broadcasting here in Knoxville?
It has been for six years.
And we'll be talking about that a little too. Remember, this is a call-in show. If you'd like to call in and talk about anything we're talking about, you can reach us at 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. And we'll be happy to hear from you. The line is open. Wombat, I believe you brought the subject today.
I want to talk about victimization. Have you heard about that before?
You're talking about like the victim mentality?
Yeah, I want to talk about that. I want to start, though, with a question.
Uh-huh.
And can you think of any movie where you were cheering for the underdog?
Oh, yeah, all kinds. As a matter of fact,
why don't you give an example?
Oh, there was a football game where the baseball team either won, where they were just a bunch of misfits and rednecks, or at least not athletes, and they were in some turn off to pay for the radio station or the church or whatever, and you always had to, I mean, they got your empathy up and your compassion for them, for their cause, and you would root for the underdog to come forward from the end and in the end and win.
Yeah, so you have like this movie where there's a bunch of bad ad misfits coming together, trying to be a much more, I guess, well organized, almost robotic, mechanical, well-oiled machine on the other side.
Uh-huh.
Like is that the case?
The Bad News Bears, you know, that type of thing.
Do you ever think that you would like the movie more if the perspective was switched such that the more well-funded, more powerful team was the root of the movie, and the bigger team won?
Not generally, no. You tend to side with the underdog. At least I do. What about you?
What? So when you're siding with the underdog, you also feel like emotionally invested in what they do, right? Like, there's sort of like a spirit of, I've been there too, I understand what they're fighting for, I want to be with them. Am I getting close to that?
Uh-huh, you identify with them. Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Why? So that's kind of what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about the victim, or essentially the underdog, and wanting to be the underdog to the point where you're even able to look at other people and say, well, I must not be as good as them, or I must be not as well-funded, but I have the heart to take over, and this is just the side I want to be on, because I don't want to be that team, the team that's so well-proportioned and better off. I want to be the team that is the, what's the better word for it? Frisky. I want to be the team that has like a little bit of, you know, rough edge to it, and then ultimately win at the end of the day, because that's what we normally see always in the movies, like the small guys taking over the big guys.
Well, sure.
Is that it?
Uh-huh.
have those examples in religious texts as well, but I think there's just something really appealing about that mindset that I'd like to know more about.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess more of us can identify that than with the other side. Like they said, that God must have liked poor people because he made so many of them, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just we're the audience in the movies. I guess if you got a whole audience of Donald Trumps out there, then they wouldn't really root for the underdog, but you never know. They might identify him for the length of the movie.
I don't want to get so political. We have to be careful.
Okay, any billionaires? How about that?
We have this need to feel like we need to empathetically root for the small team if there's a small team and a big team. Yeah. We feel more emotionally tied to teams that need to have to struggle, because we enjoy a struggle, especially in a narrative sense. We like that. But why do we like that? What is the need for that? Especially when it comes to why someone would, say, become especially religious. If you talk to, for example, like a Christian, they may say, hey, there's some times where I feel persecuted, there's some times where I felt down, but I know that as long as I have my faith and I believe, I'll be able to take down any larger threat or any larger emotion or any larger force that comes after me. It sounds very similar to that same kind of like underdog mentality. And I'm just wondering, where did that even come from?
Oh, it's been around forever. I mean, the hero mythological image has been around forever, you know, from the ancient Greeks, the ancient Egyptians, the uprising hero that was from poor and lowly stock reaches up. I mean, look at David and Goliath. I'm trying to think of something from Egypt, but it's not coming to me. I guess I need more study in that area.
But I think David and Goliath is a great example, because now here you have your classical underdog and a big dog, right? You have Goliath, who's just a former shepherd. You know, he's not a war-trained soldier. He's not a giant. He probably weighs 90 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
And at best, he has no sword training whatsoever. This guy doesn't probably even fit in, like, the regular sort of armor that people wear. But yet he has faith, right? So he goes to King Saul and he says, hey, I can take down your giant for you. I can handle your problems. I can handle your whole war problems. Saul's like, I don't believe you can, but you can try your best. You just seem like a ragtag youth to me. And David goes out there, and then he's faced with the whole army, and the army says, okay, well, if you can take down our biggest, most badass soldier, we'll give up. Knowing full well that was very unlikely to happen. So now you have your classic match, a match of all the ages, David versus Goliath. We know the story. David beats Goliath. Everyone's happy. He lives happily ever after.
Yeah.
But, again, it's a story where we feel like we need a root for David somehow. And I guess, why do we feel that way? Is there anything about rooting for someone who's not as well equipped, or at least seemingly not equipped? We can talk about that later. But what is it about rooting for, like, the smaller animal, smaller, like, chance?
I think
what is that gamble about?
I think that we identify with it. I mean, I think that we can place ourselves in that situation because we've been in that situation in our own life, where we see odds seem outnumbered, but we may not prevail, but our champion or the hero in the story would.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's a really great point. I think there's lots of times in our lives where we feel overwhelmed, and we need to think of times when other people have faced those same odds. Because I think that's a natural feeling to the human condition, of feeling overwhelmed, and then looking for examples that you can rely on or fall back on to give you a little bit of inspiration to move forward. Maybe that's the basis of why people go for the underdog. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I do think it can get into a dangerous territory. And that's where I start to think about victimization, at least that victimization mentality.
Yeah.
And what do you think a victimization mentality is? We can talk about that.
Well, I guess we're going to get around to it eventually, but I might as well bring up Christianity. They have had, 52 presidents in a row, but they still feel like they're being persecuted. And it all really started with Jesus. You know, Jesus was the ultimate sacrifice, the ultimate underdog who prevailed because he attained victory over death, as the story goes. So, you know, it's a martyr cult, if you will. They feel like they're being persecuted because of their beliefs when it's not the case. They're being having their privileges, the privilege that they like, having a teacher lead Christian prayer in school, when that was taken away from them, they thought that they were being victimized because they were Christians and the power was coming after them because they were Christians, when that's not the case. No religion has the right to teach children their religion using the power of government. It's right there in the Constitution. There shall be no establishment of religion by the government. And
so that's actually kind of an interesting thing, because that piece of paper that you're referring to was written by people who would be presidents, at least the next five presidents, or around that number.
Right.
So would you, and this might be a little bit off topic, but would you think that if we've had 43 presidents so far, would you think that the role of religion has just increased over time?
No, I think it comes. I think it comes and goes.
At the beginning, they may have been Christian, but they may not necessarily rule with Christian thumb on everything.
Yeah, I think it
seems like they're fairly secular with how they design the Constitution, with how they design Bill of Rights, and so on.
Yeah. Yeah,
even
well,
if they weren't equally applied to all men, they seem pretty even, evenly handed.
Yeah. Most people in the United States and down through the history don't live their lives as believing in God. The reason I say that, even Christians, even the people who go to church every Sunday, some of those people end up breaking the law and going into prison. The major population of the prison population, major religion, is Christianity. There's like 85% of the people in prison are Christians. And if they really, truly believed that God was watching them and everything that they did, they wouldn't have broken the law. It would be like seeing a cop standing there on the corner when you rob somebody, right next to him. It would never happen. But they don't really believe it, so they go ahead and do what they think, what they want to do, I guess I should say. They go ahead and break the law and go in.
I'm trying to get to the real juicy part of what you said.
Mm-hmm.
You said before that we have a country that's very much Christian, or we have a Christian dominated somewhat country. It's becoming much more left now, much more secular in its own right. But there was a high point. I would say it was much higher in the past. But at the very beginning, we had very much people who were more or less secularists designing the fundamental basis of our laws, our Constitution, of our basic rights as people. And over time, we applied a Christian layer on top of it. But for the most part, that's beginning to ebb away. And we're seeing that as us being ebbed away, we're seeing some really, really cool things being left behind. One of them is this really juicy feeling of being the underdog fighting what seems like an inevitable change of force in time. Where we used to be in charge. We had everything controlled. But now people are letting gay people get married.
Right.
Now people are not listening to the Bible. They're not teaching our holy book in school anymore. Like, there's a sense of persecution that lets people fall back on this underdog feeling. Did you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, there's even a passage in the Bible to that effect. That expect derision, expect ridicule. You will be persecuted for your beliefs. So they got it right there in the Bible, Apparently the person...
It's reinforced by the Holy Book that they would have these kinds of feelings.
Right.
In fact, it's in a lot of Holy Book that you have that. But yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the person writing the book was thinking, this stuff is crazy. I better tell them to expect it to be ridiculed.
Right. So I think we have we're just looking at American culture. We had a culture where there was basically secularists designing the fundamental basis of our laws. Then over time we became more religious, substantially more. Our government became more religious. This is more as a response to communism and so on. But now as those threats are disappearing, we're seeing the control of Christianity being released somewhat from our government. It's still there, but it's being released substantially, and it's significant.
Yeah,
and
people
are feeling that, especially Christians. They're wondering, hey, this feels like we're losing something. It feels like we're the underdogs in this movie where we're trying to, because they genuinely believe it, keep everyone's souls safe, but some evil force is turning people away from God, and now we're facing this giant enemy that we can't necessarily see or put a finger on, and we're trying to beat them down. And there's nothing wrong with being an underdog in a movie, but there is a mentality that comes when you devote your entire existence on it,
right.
You devote your entire afterlife on it, when everything that you identify with is based upon being an underdog, mm-hmm. when you develop a victim state or a victim mentality. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. And it's rife in most of the monotheistic religions, that, you know, that there will be forces trying to take your power from you and you have to fight back against it, that type of thing.
Yeah. So if you have permission in your book to fight against people who are, because you are the victim, to defend yourself in a sense, and I'm using quotation marks when I say defend yourself,
uh-huh.
you can actually start to do really bad things
mm-hmm.
out of a mentality that you deserve to be able to do those bad things because you are, in fact, the victim. And I think you can see that not only just in Christianity, but you see that in Islam as well.
Right.
A lot of them are controlled by this mentality where we are the victims, we're losing our land, we're losing our life that was given to us by our God.
Mm-hmm.
We are allowed to do these bad things because some bad things were done to our forefathers and to us, and so on.
Yeah.
And that makes it okay.
Yeah, that could be reflected.
To kill or hurt people.
Yeah, that could be reflected in the doctrine of Taqiyya. You know, if we're the underdog, if we don't have the power in society, if we're minority, then we can, the doctrine of Taqiyya in Islam allows you to lie to protect the faith and protect the religion when you don't have any power.
Yeah, not even that, but there is jihad, which is essentially
one of the
pillars of Islam, which refers to suffering as
right.
a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
The suffering comes about from, which is essentially, so Allah is basically testing his believers with strife. And the strife comes about from other people who try to hurt people who believe in him. And if you ever, so not only is it mentioned in the book that if you are one of those people who are being hurt, or you have a history of people who have been hurt in your past, if you are victimized, or if you see yourself as a victim, there are paths that you can take that are clearly outwritten in the Bible or in the Quran that justify certain actions that may actually hurt other people. And that's generally not a good thing. There are texts in the Bible even that say, hey, you know, even Jesus would say that he's come not to be, you know, a bridge of peace, but a sword
right.
that will turn fathers against their own sons.
Mm-hmm.
There's phrases that people can take very, very seriously that, along with the victim mentality, can actually cause them to act as if they're the underdogs in their own movie. And that's a very dangerous thing.
Right, but actually act in violent behavior against other people. In other words, they become the aggressor only because of the belief that they're a victim.
Sure. So let's try to dissect this a little bit. Maybe there's a path to victimhood that we can try to like dissect and see if we can find better alternatives, or help any listeners or anyone who listens to this in the future find a better path away from being in that kind of a mindset, because it could be a really hard one to get out of.
Yeah.
So I'd say the first one maybe is just to understand like let's just try to understand what it means to be like just an underdog versus what actually is an underdog. Like, for example, we had mentioned David versus Goliath, and I just want to analyze what an underdog is. David was facing Goliath, and Goliath had a sword and weight on his side. Meanwhile, David had a slingshot, an artillery-based, long-distance, highly precise weapon, plus all the power of an almighty super being, all-knowing God on his side, supposedly, right?
Right.
I wouldn't even say that David's actually the underdog in that case. I would think the real underdog was Goliath, who only had a sword to back him up.
Mm-hmm. He didn't have a chance.
I think if you look at like stories like this, where certain underdogs are idolized, it sort of seems like the tables have been, or the balances have been switched. One of my favorite movies with underdogs and non-underdogs is Star Wars. You remember Star Wars, right?
Sure.
You're American.
Yeah, obviously.
You remember the first scene?
Mm-hmm. Who? Luke?
You remember the first scene of Star Wars, the very, very first scene?
Oh, yeah, when Leia was being chased by the Starcruiser.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. that huge ship just slowly rises into the
scene,
mm-hmm. and it's chasing these tiny little rebel ships that are right in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can barely see them, and then this giant, huge Empire ship comes behind it. But again, the rebels win, but the rebels had, and I don't want to cause any movie buffs to call in, but the movies, the rebels actually had the entire force helping them, which is like this mystical ability to fly or move things telepathically or cause a lightsaber to just jut out and fight really well. Like, it seemed like the rebels had a lot more on their side going for them than just...
Well, they had the light side of the force, but the Empire had the dark side of the force. So there was an equalizer there.
The dark side of the force. Yeah, that's actually a much more fair point. True. Yeah. Absolutely true.
Yeah.
But the Jedi, man, they're a team overpowered, though. You're not me compared to the ones who could just use the dark side force.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like there's a better leverage of power. And you know what? That's actually a great point. But I would say, back on the David and Goliath thing, there mm-hmm. seems to be way, way more power on David's side compared to Goliath, compared to what you'd see in Star Wars. Well, one side can use the light side, and one side can use the dark side. Is that at least fair?
Yeah. But they had right on their side, and of course that's the great equalizer in mythology. You know, the right
sure.
always makes right. The right always gives you might to defeat the dark side, as it were.
Another
main underdog that we don't think about too much it's in our society, is American Nation. I mean, when we first started off, we just had a handful of states and just a few people that were signing a document to stand up against the most powerful country in the world at the time.
Yeah.
And we prevailed, and it's a hell of a story, and we identify with it.
And it took a lot of work and a lot of sacrifices,
uh-huh.
too. And there's a lot of untold heroes that that will probably remain forgotten in the course of time. But, yeah, that is another underdog that we take a lot of pride in, especially as Americans, that we're able to, you know, stand our ground and take a piece of what it took to start a country of our own in the face of what was a worldwide empire at the point.
Right.
But if you were to look at religious versions of underdogs, you normally have one side that is very large, like a large army, and then another side that's substantially smaller but has the entire power of a god on their
mm-hmm.
side.
Right.
And whenever you throw God on one side, that side has way more power than the smaller, or than the large army.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's to the point where it's no longer an underdog situation. So when people who are maybe in a religious dogma actually try to consider what they idolize
mm-hmm.
or what they really appreciate as a true underdog story in the
right.
holy text,
mm-hmm.
consider the fact that if a god is helping your smaller underdog character win, that side is no longer the underdog. That side is now the empire. That's the overpowered side.
Right.
And the other side is the one that's doomed almost by fate to lose.
Right.
Maybe that's the side we should be cheering for.
Right.
Like the football team that you were talking about.
Right. One thing we need to point out at this point is that we are talking about stories and movies and themes that have underdogs which eventually
sure.
prevail. But in the real world, it doesn't work that way. I mean, if there was a god on your side, really, in the world, the Jews never would have been victimized and, persecuted and killed to such great numbers in World War II. You can look down through history where the might came with numbers, and the underdogs did not prevail. It's reality versus storytelling.
Sure. I mean, it really makes you think, like, if you need a god needs to join a side
mm-hmm.
to stop a war where one side's being demolished just in time to end the war, why did he or she or it allow the demolishing to even occur in the first place?
Right.
Why did the god allow for, you know, the sides to be so imbalanced in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Why do the Jews in the ancient Abrahamic god texts allow for the destruction of Jewish cities, you know, of the hurting of Jewish people, or even, like, the enslavement of non-Hebrews? If you go into the Quran, why does, like, God allow for, you know, his chosen people, his chosen few, to actually be harmed to the point where they actually require Muhammad to come and rescue them or save them or free them and so on?
Right.
Why don't allow these hard truths to occur before he needs to step in and help one side win a war.
Right, and how many people have to die just to make that point? I mean, let's say that you had look at the blacks during the Civil War or before the Civil War. How many people died in slavery before God theoretically came along and freed them? Of course, if you're a Christian, you don't think Lincoln did it. You think that Lincoln was moved by God to free the slaves. So you think it was God that was doing it. Why did he wait so long? You know, why did he allow so many people to suffer and die if he was real?
Sure.
You know, how does he allow? Think of the Middle East, the situations that we have in Northern Africa, where people are dying every single day, horrible deaths, and a lot of these people are Christian or Muslim, and if your God was real, he must be a real jerk to allow this kind of stuff. But at the same time, you claim that he's an all-loving God, and it just doesn't work. It works against you to think that.
Sure, I think so. I think we brought up two really great points. One, in that if you're an underdog that has a God on your side and the other side doesn't have a God on their side, mm-hmm. you're no longer really an underdog
right.
anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, if a God steps in to save the underdogs or the smaller team that's been damaged and hurt from the bigger team, if a God steps in to save the day, why didn't he step in sooner when his people needed him the most, you know?
Right.
Like, that brings questions into whether or not that God is actually a good one, especially if that God claims to be powerful and all-knowing.
Yeah.
It seems like either he knew that there was going to be some damage occurring ahead of time and chose not to save his people, or he wasn't powerful enough to even stop it at that point.
Right.
Which, in both my questions, bring up whether or not that's still worthy of worship. And
that
God truly is powerful and all-knowing. He can't be all there, because that's clearly a jerk God at work.
All right, and I've got another thing to talk about on that same line. When we come back, we get to the bottom of the hour. I'm going to start a couple of information messages and a song. This song that you'll be hearing during the break is Waves of Light by the Symphony of Science, and we're going to take a short break right now. This is WOZOLP-FM, 103.9 FM in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Find stories of talking snakes laughable? Do you prefer the scientific method over supernatural beliefs? Are you concerned about religious leaders and organizations imposing their values and rules on your body, your family, and the rest of our society? Well, take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meets weekly for fellowship and provides a forum for people who support skeptical thinking and rational discussion of these and other issues. To find out more information or to find out about our next meeting, visit us on the web at www.rationalist.org.
Why are we here? Where do we come from? These are the most enduring of questions. It's a story that we wouldn't be able to tell were it not for the one thing that connects us vividly to our vast cosmos. Light. Through light, we can stare back across the entire history of the universe and discover how it all began. See, those ancient beams of light are messengers from the distant past, and they carry with them a story. A story of the origin of the universe. Gaze up into the night sky, capture the light, and read the story of the universe. Isn't it a wonderful thing? We are part of the universe. Isn't it a wonderful thing? The story of the universe is our story. The story of the universe is our story. Carried on waves of light. Wave after wave of light. All colors of the rainbow, colors of the rainbow. Wave after wave of light. All colors of the rainbow, colors of the rainbow. Light can transport us to the past, and we have become virtual time travelers. Night falls, darker and darker, and the universe fades into view. Night falls, darker and darker, darker and darker.
Stars born in distant realms. Alien worlds created by gravity. Stars that shine with the light of a thousand suns. And vast, swirling galaxies. These waves of light are messengers from across the cosmos. And through them, we have discovered the wonders of our galaxy, frozen in time. Gaze up into the night sky, capture the light, and read the story of the universe. Isn't it a wonderful thing? We are part of the universe. Isn't it a wonderful thing? The story of the universe is our story. The story of the universe is our story. Carried on waves of light. Wave after wave of light. All colors of the rainbow, colors of the rainbow. Wave after wave of light. All colors of the rainbow, colors of the rainbow, rainbow. Billions and billions of suns shining in the sky. The story of the universe carried on waves of light. Gaze up into the night sky. Capture the light. And read the story of the universe.
If you live in or around the Knoxville area and are questioning your religious beliefs or simply believe in one less God than everyone else, well, you're not alone. The Atheist Society of Knoxville is a fun and friendly group of people just like you that meets twice a week at a bar or restaurant. We meet every Tuesday night following the show at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria for happy hour. You'll find our group either inside or on the patio. Look for Richard Dawkins' silver-jacketed book, The God Delusion, standing upright on the table. But if you plan to preach, prophetize, provoke, or punch, please don't. We all question what we believe at one point in our lives. If this is the time for you, come join us for food, drink, conversation, and fun.
And we're back.
Oops, got to stop that music.
That's for the end of the show. And we're back. Welcome back to the show, Wombat. We were talking. We were talking about the victim mentality and religious beliefs. You were
hey,
gonna,
don't play the victim. I think we should call the show that today.
That's
hey,
right.
Don't play the victim, guys.
That sounds right to me. What do you mean by that? Let's expand upon that. By the way, this is a call-in show. If you'd like to call in and join the conversation, you can reach us at 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. And you were talking about something during the break. Would you like to go into that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. So what we're talking about is the path towards victimization, because I think that's the dangerous mindset that comes from being really awed and inspired by underdogs. It's particularly ones in holy texts. And I think we've discussed so far that if you're an underdog in a holy text and you have God on your side, you're probably not actually an underdog because you have an all-powerful being on your side that can basically warp any form of reality towards your benefit. Mm-hmm. And the other side doesn't have that no matter how large the army is.
Yeah.
So that's always been like the ongoing cause. Also, if you are an underdog who's had their family or village burned down in a holy book, and then God comes in to help you destroy the enemy, why didn't God step in to keep your village safe in the first place? It seems like that God's kind of like a jerk.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest. That's kind of a mean God to step in only at the time when it benefits him to cause more strife and warfare.
Right.
Maybe for just his entertainment.
Yeah, even
but really.
Even Christopher Hitchens would say, you know, if man had been around 150,000 years to 200,000 years, he says, why would he have only stepped in like 2,500 years ago and given us the Ten Commandments? Where was he for 98% of the entire human experience? Where did he go? Why was he not there?
What?
Sorry?
No, that's true. I agree completely.
Yeah, it's just totally irresponsible to put us here and then not give us any guidance at all for 98% of your existence.
Seems like it's almost indicative of a God either not being morally just, or not being all powerful, or not being all knowing. One of those, or maybe all three. And in either case, or in each of those three cases, or even cases of those combined, why worship a God like that? Why worship a God that would allow such mean things to happen, not inform his people, not be powerful enough to stop his people from getting hurt, and, or not knowing ahead of time that his people can hurt based on the world that he set in motion?
And that
seems like there's a lot of problems there.
Well, that's so true. If you have an all-loving God, it would basically undermine it and negate it. Now, it doesn't negate a trickster God or a God who doesn't care anything about you or a God who actively works against you. That kind of God we could probably believe in, considering that there's all kind of evil in the world and bad things do happen to good people, even good believers,
absolutely.
Not lifelong believers.
Like, I'm fully willing to be, I would at least say that the premise of a trickster God or a God that is actually not all good and is actually sort of amoral in a lot of senses is more likely to exist than the gods that are being presented to me right now by the major religions.
Right.
It seems like I would be much more willing to stomach a God that actually does not have our best interests in mind. But again, even if I believe in that kind of a God, why would I go through the trouble of worshiping him? Except for out of fear.
Right.
Even out of fear, I'd be not fully into it. And
right.
Who knows? So
if this is a God that would...
No matter what you're doing, if that's the case.
Right.
But in a better sense, why not just say, hey, that just sounds like a really nice story. I'm going to go on and move on with my life and try to be the best person I can be. And if it turns out a God does exist, he'll at least know that I tried my best. And if he doesn't appreciate that, he wasn't worth worshiping in the first place.
Right. I mean, I just... Just consider childhood cancer. I mean, anything else. There's 27 other examples you can come up with right now. But, I mean, what kind of all-loving God would allow, much less cause, a disease that would take children like that? I mean, in such a horrible way.
Sure.
I mean, that's, even if he just doesn't know about you, that's better than actively saying that he could help and not doing it. And the Bible says, you know, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. You can do Jesus said, you can do the things that I do, which means heal people and bring people back from the dead. But it doesn't work. I mean, you get charlatans up on the stage doing magic shows, basically, for you, planting victims in the audience and then magically healing them. But there's no miracles involved. It's a show. It's for entertainment. But they certainly play to the gullible crowd and take real money from them.
So let's talk about that crowd a little bit more then. So crowds, another thing about big crowds is they love those underdog stories. They love the gushy feelings of being able to relate with a team that's faced with overwhelming odds, because in life there's overwhelming odds as well. From a number of different sources, whether it be from, you know, stretch from work, or how to raise your kids properly, or how to make your next paycheck, or maybe even you have all your satisfactions in life, but you just don't feel fulfilled. And there's a conscious stress knowing that you're going to die one day, trying to fill your life with as much enjoyment and peace and happiness as possible, and never feeling like it's quite enough. Sometimes even happy people have that. They will look towards underdog stories to try to get a sense of people who are going through the same thing they are, and that feeling when the underdog wins inspires them so much that they can go on and live an even happier life. And I don't think there's a problem with that. But there does come a problem when if you internalize an underdog story to the point where it becomes part of the identity, much like how religion becomes part of an identity of a person, they'll say, hey, I'm a Christian, instead of like, you know, I'm a person that believes in this, but I do have some doubts about X, Y, Z that I think are reasonable. But for the most part, I feel somewhat convinced that this is true until more information comes to me. But whenever, like, things on that level, they say, I'm this, I believe 100%, and all the things that come with it, including underdog stories that could ultimately put them on a path where they start feeling victimized when they start to see that, or start to realize that the rest of the world isn't necessarily following their same book of rules.
True. But when it gets right down to it, why are they believing that in the first place? They've got to realize that these are stories. These are stories in a book. They are not actually true. But they don't take the time to research them.
They may not have enough information to contradict them or test them.
Yeah, when you
consider at a later age, and they would just come to believe it.
Yeah, when you consider the amount of thought and research that people go through when they take a new job, buy a new car, buy a house, they don't put any of that into their religion just because they've been told that all their life. I mean, from their earliest childhood, it's just a given. And it's been reinforced by at every level of the society from the mailman, the parents, the mailman, the police force, all the way through the mayor, to every congressman.
Yeah,
even
when the president says it, it seems like they live in this echo chamber where everything seems to fall in line with them believing in this, God figure. Like, everyone believes it. Even the president believes it. Of course it's true. But when we start to see society change, when we start to see society move away from that and start to respect the other people who have the different kinds of faith and start to recognize that, hey, these people don't believe in the same things we do, but we still need to respect. We still need to let them build their mosques in the city. We still need to allow, atheists to just say, hey, they're atheists and they don't believe. And we need to cater our laws towards people who have more secular, beliefs and systems, because ultimately we're coming to the realization that, our country is dominated by one religion, one way or the other. Even secular laws have some room for improvement, but as they're being improved, they've done so in secular manners. So when religious people see that, they start to feel the same persecution they would have in their movies. And if that's the feeling that they're having, that can put them on a path towards feeling like they're victimized because their identities are being challenged.
True.
And that's dangerous.
Yeah, it is. Well, what can people do about it?
That's a great question. What I don't have an answer to, I was hoping I could brainstorm with you. Maybe we can come up with a solution before the show ends.
It's a tough one because people become inured to it. They become identified with it. It is really hard to find a way out.
It is.
The only thing I can think of is
research.
I've
talked to him on the show a couple of times.
Yeah.
And he says that I tend to be too logical in most of my responses. Uh-huh. And there's three parts to every kind of argument or any kind of solution. There's three parts. And there's the logic side, there's the ethical side, and then there's like the passionate side, like the pathos, the connection with the person, the people. And maybe we can structure our solution for this problem in those three things. I think as far as logic is concerned, we need to just realize, why do we feel this attachment to this kind of holy book story? What has gone on in my life and my culture that has led me to believe that these things are actually, these people that I respect so much, that I idolize, are actually other gods, even though they have a giant, powerful god backing them up?
Yeah.
And are they really worth respecting in the same light that I had before? If I can at least admit to myself that maybe these guys aren't actually other gods, maybe that can help me get myself off that path eventually, or at least slow down.
Right. excuse me. There's a lot of that going on, and I know we don't want to get into politics, but when you take like the lower level of echelon of society, and you're a Republican, and you get them to vote for you so that you can be in power, and then therefore take graft money, do more for your business, which makes more profit off the lower classes of people. You're actually voting, when you're voting for them, you're voting against your own self-interest. And the only way that you can get around that is to research the issues, research the candidates. And it's just, they would rather go with emotional gut reaction because, the right is so well-founded in just sending you out on, wild goose chases and red herrings. Like, today it's class warfare, it's terrorism, it's all kinds of things that they want you to worry about rather than worry about what they're doing once they get into power.
Yeah, I agree. So I think you said is also really important at the top of that answer is just research your position.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just vote for your, you know, the candidate that has the same letter next to the party that you feel most affiliated with. Research where they come from. Research why they believe what they believe. Because that tends to be the most important thing.
Right.
And the same goes for our holy book stories. You know, research them. Understand, hey, you know, like, how many people actually did God order to kill in this war? Was there any other way to get around it? Who is he supporting? Why is he supporting these things?
Mm-hmm.
This seems like a little bit of a necessary thing for God, who can just instantly make everybody love each other,
right,
or just give the other side the lands that they lost that started the conflict in the first place.
Right.
Or just make new land that's for people to live in and not have to fight over.
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be a lack of a willingness to at least critically research why things go on.
Right.
Well, if we're to move on to the next one, let's go to pathos, or the passionate side, the connection, the emotional side. There seems to be a gooey feeling that comes with feeling like you're the underdog in your own movie. But real life tends to be more like a story of people desperately trying to find a reason as to why they're unique, when really, because we all have that same feeling, because we all feel overwhelmed, because we all feel like a desire to stand out to a certain extent,
yeah,
we actually have way more in common, to the point where feeling like you're one and the same with everyone else, feeling that communion, that social connection with everyone, is a lot better than feeling like you're persecuted and you're desperately looking for a reason to need a God on your side to help you in the first place. So if you were to compare those two feelings, I think one's substantially better than the other. And I think if you just took the opportunity to at least try out this other alternative than feeling like you need a God on your side to help you, but rather we're all the same creature existing on one planet trying to do the best we can for each other. And we're not perfect, but we're going to do better every day if we can help it. There's something beautiful about that. And I think if people were to just try to get the higher fruit, mm-hmm, it'd be better.
Yeah. Who was it said that, I think it was Robert G. Ingersoll said, the world is my country and love is my religion. In other words, he totally took out the borders and said, all of mankind is my brother, is my family. You know, try to accentuate the positive between what you share with everybody else versus looking for differences and something that you can exploit or at least feel victimized from.
I'm feeling good. We're getting positive vibes. So I agree 100%. And let's keep the positive train rolling. Let's hit the last part of our answer, which is the ethical side, which I think is the most important part, because if you're on the path of victimization, there is a result that we've seen in the news where you can be so zealous and so personally conflicted with a victim mentality that you can actually start to harm other people's as a result of your mindset. And ethically, that's not justified. The action itself, hurting people for the sake of something that you believe in, that's still wrong to do. There are points where you can be justified. There are points where you may be doing that just to survive, to help yourself, to protect people.
Mm-hmm.
But the action of causing terror, the actions of causing strife just for the sake of a belief system or a for God, these things are cruel and there's no excuse for them.
Right.
And I think if people were able to look at this on an ethical point of view, where they could say, hey, if everyone acted like this, if everyone started killing each other just for the sake of the person God they believe in, how long would we last as a species?
Right.
And compare it to living with a God where you don't hurt other people, but tend to respect each other's differences, knowing that people are different and they're going to act differently and they're going to believe different things, and that's totally fine. That doesn't mean you have to go out and hurt them for the name of the things that you believe in.
No,
if we took that a little more seriously, if we looked at it in a more ethical light, we can start to at least get ourselves away from the path of victimization where we can justify terrible actions to one another.
Sure. Take the example of Gandhi or Martin Luther King. You know, they made so much progress, social progress, without violence. They don't need violence.
Yeah.
You can, and they were literally victimized by the country involved, but they did not let it get to them. they did not let it bring them down as far as a movement. They kept on doing what they needed to do, and they brought about really some radical social change.
So if we were to look at another example that's more recent, there's a movement called the Black Lives Matter. I'm a black person, by the way. And I've seen that there's two different schools of thought. One is, you know, whenever there's an incident where a police officer or some crime against an innocent black person occurs, there's, you know, protests in the streets that ultimately turn out to be very violent affairs. There's rioting. There's a lot of anger. But then I've also seen another side, where when something happens, there's protests, but they're a lot more peaceful, and they try to be more inclusive to getting white people in, they all different races in, because ultimately the message is that all lives matter, and that the way how they're being treated, or certain groups of the population being treated, is against our natural sense of humanism that each of us have. Right. And these are the tragedies that we should be acknowledging of. So there's peaceful strategies to getting the same point across, where violence can actually muddle the message that you try to express. Again, I just think that overall, if you look at your actions on an ethical level, you should always consider, what if other people who believe differently act the same way I did? Would the world be any better because of it, or would we all be in the same worse boat or worse off because of it? And if the answer to that is yes, then maybe it should give you an alarm to change your course of action and try to be a little bit more nicer in understanding of how people behave in their lives.
Right. And try not to consider yourself in the victim mentality. If you can avoid it, because it works against you. You need to accentuate the common ground between yourself and the people that you're trying to move toward your point of view.
And you know what? Sometimes, legitimately, you are a victim. You know, just to take the counterpoint of everything we've been saying, you know, there is going to be times where you are, in fact, being victimized, and that requires attention. But again, you should always still take the ethical choice of whether or not you're good in hurting a lot of other people to make up for the fact that you've been hurt yourself, and whether or not that will resolve anything in a shorter span of time. Always think about, you know, the logic of your actions, the empathetic connections, the emotional connection you're making with other people, and the ethical repercussions of what you do. Always, and I know it's hard, but if you do it, it makes you a better person overall. It makes you a more thoughtful person overall, and it's worthwhile to do so.
Mm-hmm. And if you do that and the other side doesn't, then it's clearly to the bystander, to the people who are watching the situation, it's really easy for them to see who was actually taking advantage of the other and who was victimizing
right.
the other. And that,
right.
of course, is what Gandhi did and
it came,
Martin Luther King.
It came to you from the victim to the perpetrator in the first place.
Right.
So, yeah. Just beware of your surroundings. So just to review, beware of your surroundings. Know what an actual underdog is. If God's on your side, you're not the underdog. Sorry. Also, God can be kind of a jerk if you needed him to help you out with the situation in the first place, because he's going to help you out beforehand. Don't put yourself on the victim mentality, and think about the actions that you do in a logical, passionate, and ethical sense, whenever it's possible. It goes for the best. And I think we had a positive talk today. I'm ready for some good news.
Okay, go ahead.
You go first. I got some news that I'd like to talk about, but I think at the bottom of the hour, we missed out on one quick plug for some show. I think we have like an atheist show that you were talking about.
Oh yeah, the TV show. I do need to plug that. We have a TV show that's broadcast here in Knoxville every week on Tuesday at 5 o'clock. And you can watch it on Comcast Channel 12, which is Community Access TV. And it's a call-in show. It's called Free Thought Forum. And anybody can call in. Anybody can communicate with the atheists on the air at that time. So it's every Tuesday, 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock. And then right after the show, if you'd like to join about 25, 30 of your favorite atheist friends, you can meet us with at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City from about 5:30 till about 8 o'clock. And that's every Tuesday.
Longer than that. We go into the dead of night even.
Well, some people do stick around a lot after dinner. Several people leave at dinner or after dinner, and then a lot of us sit around and cure all the world's problems. And if there's one thing we can guarantee, it'd be a good conversation.
And there's some really good music that they play late at night, too. As the night gets longer, the conversations get more interesting, and the music and the food tastes better. So there's always that.
Yeah.
If I missed the show that was on Comcast, is there any other way that I can keep up with it?
Oh, yeah. We have a fan who's been recording the shows and putting them on YouTube. Of course, every video is on YouTube pretty much these days. But Free Thought Forum Knoxville is what you'd search for. Three words. Free Thought Forum Knoxville. When you go on YouTube, search for those words, and you'll be able to find about 6 years of archives of the show. And you can sort them by date. So if you want to start at the beginning or pick up at the end, you can do that. And we recommend
nice.
You. Yeah.
I'm ready for some outro music and some good news. How about you?
Yeah. Let's see. We've got some outro music here. I don't know if I got any good news, though. Hold on.
So I could start with some. There's a school in Jamaica. It's in Trinidad, and they were having a discussion that is widely publicized on YouTube about how they needed to have a science program in their school that's specific to Jamaica, or Jamaican science, they wanted to call it.
Really?
And that was because a lot of the students wanted the belief that, you know, black magic is real and witchcraft is real, and they wanted to have a science that catered to them rather than them learning what they saw as a very Eurocentric or westernized version of science. They thought it was unfair that they were learning that versus a science that they could more easily acclimate to.
Yeah.
And the professor that was hearing the question handled that response so well.
What did he say?
Instead of just outright denying that witchcraft didn't exist or black magic didn't exist, he said, well, what if I also, I hear your point, but what if I also posit that, you know, aliens exist and that everything that happens on Earth is because of aliens, and I call that alien science. So that we have Jamaican science, alien science, and then any other kind of science you want to think about, like magic science, black magic science, so on.
Yeah, Congo
what
science.
What kind of way could we reliably use to demonstrate one of them as being accurate and one of them not being accurate? And the way to do it is by using unbiased science, mm-hmm. which is what science is today. We have a system that's really great, that doesn't follow anyone's team, that doesn't care about even the solution or the answers. It's just a methodology that's used to verify what's the most reasonable to be true. And that's what we have right now.
Right.
And that's why it's a good thing to have compared to having one that specifically caters to Jamaican
right.
people.
There can be only one. Put in the movie language, there can be only one. Science.
There can be only one. And I just thought it was a really eloquent way that he handled it. That thing is on YouTube. If you look that up, Jamaican people talking about how the schools should change from regular science to teaching Jamaican science. It's been a very elaborate means for a lot.
Yeah.
What do you have?
Oh, I don't have anything. I haven't looked at any news or anything, but it's not good news, but there was a group in India who got together, an atheist group, and they were going to have a meeting, just a simple meeting. But the religious leaders got together and talked to the government and said, we can't have this, and they canceled the meeting. So
no.
At least it was not violent, so that's good news. But they'll keep working at it. You know that the atheists are going to continue trying to have a voice and have their meetings and grow their group. So we'll work toward that end. Any final words?
You know what? It's disappointing now, but I think in the future they're going to keep trying, and I think that's the effort. They are the true underdogs.
They have
no
boy, that's for sure.
On their side.
Yeah.
They're going to try to keep doing their best, and as long as they maintain a positive attitude about it and don't develop a victim mentality, I think they're going to pull through, and you're going to be seeing more atheist-related meetings in India sooner than later.
Okay, last words.
Everybody's going to somebody's hell. I stole yours.
Okay. Everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Okay, that's it. We're going to have to wrap it up. And this has been the Free Thought Radio Hour in WOZO LP FM 103.9 live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll see you next week. Say bye.
See you. Bye.
I don't believe in fairies. I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in vampires hungry for our
don't.